This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 7:17 in the morning. It's Thursday, the 4th of March. And of course, you're listening to The Morning Run. Now, in about half an hour, we'll be speaking to Hezri Samsuri, Managing Editor of Careta.my on the country's vehicle end-of-life policy. But in the meantime, let's talk about our economy, because the Klang Valley and other parts will enter into the Conditional Movement Control Order, or CMCO, starting from tomorrow. This means that inter-district travel within a state will be allowed, and businesses such as cinemas will also be able to reopen.
However, interstate travel is still not permitted, and there have been mixed signals given by the government on when this will be lifted. Earlier in the week, Health DG Tan Sri Noor Hisham said that interstate travel will be permitted once 70% of the population is vaccinated. However, in contrast, Senior Minister Datuk Sri Ismail Sabri later said that it would be lifted when cases drop to the double-digit levels. Commentators have pointed out that the ban on interstate travel limits the economic recovery that can take place.
So for a discussion on the pace of economic recovery, we speak to Ong Kian Ming, Member of Parliament for Bangi. Now, Kian Ming, you have objected to indications that the interstate travel ban could remain until the end of the year. What do you think the government should be factoring into the decision whether or not to lift the ban, though?
First of all, good morning. Thanks for inviting me to speak on this very important topic. I think one of the first things that the government needs to do and has failed to do is to basically explain to the public what are the economic costs of not opening the borders, because they actually have to do the calculation and they are in a position to be able to take into account the different economic impacts to different sectors, and then also to contrast this with the possible health impact that will take place. So everything is about sort of like a cost-benefit analysis. I do not deny that if, let's say, you do open up borders, the number of cases will likely rise. But then what is the acceptable degree of increase in cases? Are you going to, say that if you're going to come down to single or double digits, you may actually have to wait until the end of the year, you know, similar to having a 70% sort of like herd immunity. What is the impact on, let's say, the hotel sector, on the retail sector? I think many businesses will be affected very negatively. And what the government has failed to do is basically to explain to us this cost-benefit analysis and the scientific basis for the decision-making on their part, whether or not to open up borders.
So give me a sense, because I saw yesterday our finance minister was saying that the relaxation reduced the losses to 200 to 300 million, right? So early on, when we were at MCO, it was 700 million. And in the first MCO, it was about close to 2 billion, right? When you look at these numbers, are these the right, you know, indications of that we should open? Or what other things we should be looking at beyond just the economic GDP impact?
Okay, I think consistent SOPs is something that we're going to talk about, and this is something that I want to highlight. So let me just give you an example of inconsistent SOPs that makes, I think, many people in certain sectors that have been negatively affected very, very troubled. So the government has allowed kenduris or sort of like wedding gatherings to take place, correct? If you think about kenduris, what usually happens in kenduris or weddings, you know, regardless of the race of the couple getting married, people talk. When they talk, they usually don't wear face masks. They gather together quite closely in close proximity in an enclosed place. Some of them may not have very good ventilation and they are in a kenduri for long periods of time.
But right? Can I just challenge you? Isn't it the same as cinemas, which you have agreed to?
Of course not. Do you have long conversations in the cinema? I hope you don't. That would be very inconsiderate to other people. Do you move around in the cinema a lot? You know, do you change seats, right? Do you eat a lot in the cinema? I mean, some people do. They eat a lot of popcorn and stuff like that, right? So it's totally different, you know, from a kenduri. So when you have these kinds of inconsistent SOPs, you're allowing kenduris, but you're not allowing interstate travel. If I'm going to go to Penang for a trip, I'm going to go to stay at a hotel. I'm not going to be talking to a lot of people. I'm going to be spending it with my family. Right, right. Many hotels have also very strict SOPs. So why not allow interstate travel?
So it's the nature of interaction that matters, right?
Exactly. So that is the scientific basis of decision making that I'm very frustrated by. Mm. I know I've done a lot of reading on this. Many of my colleagues have as well, but the government seems to have not gotten the memo.
Okay, Kian Ming, I have another question though. Assuming, you know, because at the end of the day, it's always this balance between economics and health, right? And the race to flatten the pandemic curve. But assuming that the data proves that we should really still consider banning interstate travel, and unfortunately that will have an impact on the hotel operators or the hospitality guys, what kind of suggestions do you have to help them tide over till we get to the point where, yes, it is safe to open up our country?
That is actually a very wrong question to ask. Because, I'm a movie fan, so I'll quote something from Jerry Maguire to you guys. Show me the money. Or in this case, show me the data. Has the government shown us any data in terms of any cost-benefit analysis that they've made? What are the economic losses of the various sectors? Yes. Tengku Zafrul, the finance minister, throws out numbers like every day we lose 700 million, 200 million, blah, blah, blah. So let's say we break it down to individual hotels. If a hotel is going to be losing 100,000, 200,000, 500,000 a day or a week, is it going to be able to last until the end of the year? I mean, can the government actually give grants to that amount for these hotels to last until the end of the year? No, they can't survive until the end of the year.
But YB, I get what you're saying. But, you know, we were in a conversation with MAH early this week, and they can't even quantify the impact of their support because they don't have enough data to make a request to the government about certain subsidies and all that.
Okay, the reason why individual associations like the MAH are not able to come out with the data is that they don't have, you know, full-time researchers and consultants working for them. Right? If the Ministry of Finance and our Malaysian government, they can easily go out and hire McKinsey or Boston Consulting Group or Bain or whatever and be able to generate this data. Bank Negara has many very good economists there who can help quantify this data. Right? So if, let's say, Bank Negara, MOF can come up with a figure like 700 million, 200 million, I'm sure they can band together enough experts, people from Khazanah, PNB. I don't think we have a shortage of experts who can estimate the economic impact of this MCO on a very fine-grained basis. But the thing is, we have not seen any of the data.
How true, Kian Ming. Another thing I want to ask you, though, and hopefully this time it's a right question. Are there any other businesses facing hardship that you think we should pay attention to or assistance? Because we've talked about hotels, we talk about hospitality, we talk about cinemas, but who are we missing out?
Okay, I'll give you a very clear example from my own constituency, and I think this affects a lot of people as well. People who are doing beauty services, makeup, cutting nails, things like that. Hair salons were obviously a point of controversy. But people doing the makeup, in Chinese, we call it meiyong. Malays do it as well, Indians do it as well. They were allowed to operate during the MCO, but they were only allowed to sell their makeup products, right? But if you think about it, you know, if you look at overseas examples, people wear proper face masks. In fact, you can do these kind of services in full PPE gear, right? And in fact, those people who are giving the services, providing the services, they are even more scared. You know, they want to make sure that they are shielded from their customers. But during the MCO period, they were not allowed to operate or give their services. So many of them who had already taken a big hit in last year's MCO 1.0 took another big hit again. That's just one example. If you go down to the ground, if you drill down to the ground, I'm sure that you can find many other similar industries that will be similarly affected. And just to cap it off, the kind of inconsistencies in terms of policies that we have here, we don't allow cinemas to open, but we allow the casino to open way sooner than the cinemas, right? And if you think about it, casinos are similar. You stay in an enclosed space for long periods of time. You don't talk much, hopefully. Right, and then the air circulation may be similar or maybe even worse than cinemas, but you're allowed to operate for far at a much earlier date. And we all know this is about lobbying power, right? It's not really about science, and this is what really frustrates me about the decision making process on the part of this government.
Well, let me just get your thoughts about the science of this, right? Do you think politicians should be the first group to receive vaccinations then?
Okay. In an ideal scientific evaluation, I would say that politicians should follow the same schedule as other people in the country. So if a politician is a frontliner in terms of a doctor who has interactions with patients on a regular basis, I think that should be one reason for them to get a vaccine. If, let's say, you are above 60, you have comorbidities like what our Prime Minister has because he's a recovering cancer patient, yes, you should take the vaccine. For myself, you know, I'm a bit younger. Hopefully, I'm a bit fitter. Under normal circumstances, I should be later in the queue. But in Malaysia, we have this problem. We have the problem of lack of vaccine confidence. And many people are going to say, hey, this vaccine is a new vaccine. Let the politician try it first. If anything will happen to them, let it happen to them first. They deserve it or whatever it is, right? So in that context, once you start vaccinating one politician, then you should vaccinate all politicians. And I want to just add one more point here. This is sort of like a 50-50 point. We are not like frontliners in the sense that we don't deal with COVID patients on a daily basis, but we do meet a lot of people, right? And there is a level of responsibility on our part to take the vaccine in order to reduce our exposure, in order to reduce the risk of us meeting different people and then giving the COVID to other people. We don't want to have another cluster like the one that was started by a minister that came back from Sabah and then he went to all different places all around the states, and infected probably tens, if not hundreds of people, you know. So that is another reason why I think politicians should take the vaccine in Malaysia at this point in time. But under medical or scientific circumstances, we should follow the schedule that other countries have followed.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Ong Kian Ming, Member of Parliament for Bangi, reminding us once again the importance of science and data when any
data,
SOP.
Data.
Go back to that because that will be the guiding light in terms of what we should do in terms for our economy too. But up next, we'll be speaking to Antonio Fatas, Professor of Economics at INSEAD on Digital Currencies. That's happening after the 7:30 a.m. news bulletin. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.